Good morning, everyone. We'll be starting in John, the 18th chapter, this morning. There are a lot of visitors with us today, and we are glad that you're here. And when I was asked to kind of take over this particular study of the book of John, the Gospel of John, I thought, well, I'll learn a lot, and I have, but as I get to chapters 18 and 19, I told Austin Byers, I said, and he's not here, they're on vacation, but I said, I hope that I can do justice to chapters 18 and 19, because it is a time in the life of Jesus where things are heating up from the Jews pursuing him, from the injustices that we'll read about, and his suffering. So I hope that we can all learn something. I hope I can keep my thought processes going in the right direction at the right time. And in just a moment, I've asked Fred to be ready to read the first 11 verses of chapter 18, and I hope you'll follow along. But as far as introductions, I wanted to just say that there's some history in the chapter before that maybe will help us understand as we jump right into chapter 18. In chapter 17, Jesus has just finished praying to God to be with him and his disciples. And if you look at chapter 17 and you happen to have a Bible that has red lettering in it, that's certainly not an important thing that you have one of those. It's not a requirement, but what it does is emphasize that the words that are recorded for us to read are words of Jesus. And almost every verse is red letter. There's a few introductory words, and then it records the words of Jesus. Jesus is at a point that he crosses over a brook by the name of Kidron. It's by the Garden of Gethsemane. And he leaves his disciples at the entrance of the garden, except for Peter, James, and John. And last Sunday, I forgot that James and John were the sons of Zebedee. I walked right down and I said, why? I can't believe I forgot the father's name of Zebedee, but I had. In Matthew 26, beginning at verse 36, there's more details provided about this. He leaves the three disciples to go pray to God alone. He comes back. And each time he comes back, which is a total of three times, his disciples are sleeping. And he said to them, my soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry you here and watch with me. And he went a little further and he fell on his face and prayed, saying, oh my God, oh my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. A little bit further on in that chapter, beginning at verse 45, he says to his disciples when he's found them, are ye still sleeping and resting? Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand. Luke 22, verse 46 says, Jesus said to them, why do you sleep? Rise and pray, lest you enter into temptation. Okay, Fred, will you read John 18, verses 1 through 11? Let's follow along with Fred.
When Jesus had spoken these words, he went out with his disciples over the brook Kidron. where there was a garden which he and his disciples entered. And Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place, for Jesus often met there with his disciples. Then Judas, having received a detachment of troops and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, came there with lanterns, torches, and weapons. Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that would come upon him, went forward and said to them, "Whom are you seeking?" They answered him, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus said to them, "I am he." And Judas, who betrayed him, also stood with them. Now when he said to them, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground. Then he asked them again, "Whom are you seeking?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus answered, "I have told you that I am he. Therefore, if you seek me, let these go their way, that the saying might be fulfilled which he spoke, 'Of those whom you gave me, I have lost none.'" Then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. So Jesus said to Peter, "Put your sword into the sheath. Shall I not drink the cup which my Father has given me?"
Okay, the betrayal, the gathering of the ones that Judas brought with him, the grabbing of Jesus, the arrest of Jesus, very beginning. And we have to remember that it was night, that there were shadows, maybe the moon was shining, but it was difficult to see. But Judas had brought a lot of people with him. Chapter 18, verse 3 said, "A band of soldiers and officers from the chief priests and the Pharisees with lanterns and swords and weapons." Luke 22 says, in verse 52, "Chief priests, captains of the temple, the elders had come to him." A little bit further it says, "And he who was called Judas, one of the 12, went before them and drew near to Jesus to kiss him. But Jesus said to him, 'Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss?'" Matthew 26, beginning of verse 47, begins, "And while he yet spake, lo, Judas, one of the 12, came, and with him a great multitude with swords and staves from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now he that betrayed him gave him a sign, saying, 'Whosoever I shall kiss, that same is he. Hold him fast.' And forthwith he came to Jesus and said, 'Hail, Master,'" or "Rabbi." "And he kissed him. And Jesus said unto him, 'Friend, wherefore art thou come?' Then came they and laid hands on Jesus, and they took him." Now, let's focus back on what John 18 has to say about this. As this group surrounded them, Jesus asked, "Who are you seeking?" And their reply, simply, "Jesus of Nazareth." His reply, very simply, don't know if there's any inflection here that he yelled it, other than to just speak it so that people could hear it. But it says, "I am he." And he goes on to say, "Therefore, if you seek me, let these go their way." The disciples that were with Jesus, he pleads for them, "Let them go away. You're after me, but let these men go." John 17, verse 12, it was recorded, "While I was with them in the world, I kept them in thy name, those that thou gave me, and I have kept, and none of them is lost, but the son of perdition, that the scripture might be fulfilled." Jesus was referring again to the fact that he had lost none of those disciples except one, the son of perdition. I think we all can identify with that. That was Judas. Jesus was referring again to he had lost none, save the son of perdition. In Psalm, the 49th, pardon me, the 41st Psalm, verse 9, "Yea, mine own familiar friend in whom I trusted, which did eat of my bread, hath lifted up his heel against me." And certainly that is what Judas had done. You remember that at the feast, they wanted to know, as Jesus said, "One of you will betray me." And they said, "Well, who is it?" And he said, "It is he who sops the bread in the bowl with me." So he had identified Judas quite some time before. On the sixth verse, when Jesus said, "I am he," it records that the whole group of men who had came to capture him, with their weapons, with their lanterns, they fell back to the ground. Now, only of the Gospels, John's the only one that records this. And a few ways to look at this falling back, maybe they were surprised that he admitted that he was Jesus of Nazareth, the one that they were seeking. Maybe they were concerned about their safety because they surely had heard of the miracles that he had performed and his power. And all of the group may have been apprehensive about taking a prisoner at night that they knew was capable of doing miracles, and that they might have had some fear based upon their own thoughts that he was the Messiah. They may have been concerned about his boldness, as the group may have had several cowards in it as well, who weren't used to chasing somebody in the darkness and capturing him. So it was a very intense moment that John records for us. Now remember that Jesus could have walked through them unharmed. He had done it before, but this time he did not. He was intent on the purpose that God had sent him to earth. Another account that we referred to already in Matthew 26, beginning of verse 50, records that Jesus said unto him, "Judas, friend, why, wherefore art thou come?" Then came they and laid hands on Jesus and took him, and behold, one of them, Peter, which were with Jesus, stretched out his hand and drew a sword and struck a servant of the high priest and smote off his ear. Jesus was against violence. So he tells Peter to put the sword up. Certainly Peter acted rashly in cutting off Malchus's ear. And Jesus rebukes him. In John, the 18th chapter, in verse 11, it says, Jesus states, "The cup which the Father has given me, shall I not drink it?" What's that cup referring to? Okay. The sacrifice that he was going to make, the death he would endure, and he did it willingly. He knew that that was his purpose, the will of his Father, that he do that.
He did it like a lamb. He did it like that. He didn't complain. He didn't try to defend himself other than to complain to his will.
The purpose of Jesus upon the earth, that's exactly what it was.
Can I make a comment on something that you said earlier?
Sure.
You know, when Jesus was praying, and he prayed that cut from him, and he went back to his disciples who were asleep. He was aggravated they were asleep. And what did he do? What did he tell them to do? Was, "Why aren't you praying so that you won't be afraid, that you won't be?" And what did all of the disciples do at this time? They fled from him. They left him all alone. Now here's the person they believed to be the Savior. Read how he was going to do, but they left. And he wanted them to pray and to use the tool that he had given them to keep themselves straight so that they wouldn't do. And that's why he only lost one, because they had this strength within them. And prayer is something that your son talked to us about today, to help keep ourselves straight and to strengthen us in that. So all this is going on,
at this time, there's a lot to meditate about fentanyl. This is full.
Yes. Jesus told them to watch and pray. I've mentioned from the beginning this morning, this is an intense chapter, an intense account of how this happened. And there's so much that the gospel writers have for us to learn from. And you're going to feel like I've jumped you from John to Matthew and back to Luke, and then we're all of a sudden we're back in John. But I tried to pick up pieces that hopefully give a good picture of the fact that these were evil people who came after Jesus.
Now, they were worldly.
Yeah. Yes. They were worldly,
but they were of the tribes.
I'll make the point several times. These were Jews. Who better should have recognized that Jesus of Nazareth was before them? But yet, they were very intent that they even kept us. The high priest said, you know, the only way to deal with him, the expedient thing to do is to kill him. That was said much earlier. And chapter 18 is really the fulfillment of the plot that they had to take him and ultimately to crucify him. A good comment, Mike.
Dale, also, when we look at this, some people may, like you mentioned, that they drew back from them when they fell. We're talking about the Pharisees, the Jews, the scribes, people who knew the law of Moses. In Jesus Christ, when they say, we're looking for Jesus of Nazareth, his comment, and we may talk about this a little bit later if you do find, I won't step all over it, but his comment was, I am. The English translators put I am he in there. He is admitting to it, but he's using the same term that Jehovah used talking to Moses at the burning bush and said, who shall I say sit in me? And God said, I am. And I'm sure that put some fear into them also, and that they've heard of his miracles, they've heard the things that he's done. We got to take care of this, and I'm sure there were some who were scared half to death that I am this person. We better be careful what we do.
Yes. Certainly emphasized who he was and the evil people who were there and what they meant. They should have understood. All right. I wanted to make a point about the instructions that Jesus gave Peter to put up the sword. It confirms that any type of force or violence was not to be used to advance the cause of Christ. To establish his kingdom or to force obedience of people. Jesus was trying to convince people that he was sent from God to save people from the consequences of their sins. And he was searching for volunteers who believed that he was the Son of God, who readily accepted his teaching, and that continues even to this day. We are saved through God's grace and the blood, the power of the blood of Jesus that's been shed on our behalf. And through that faith and the things that are prepared for us, we may enjoy salvation. He is looking for good and honest people who knew Old Testament prophecies. But he's not going to find them in this group. And when I say that what he's looking for is faithful people, we can go to Romans, the first chapter, verses 16 and 17, where Paul says, for I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believes, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek, for therein is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith. That's a quote by Paul from the book of Habakkuk. And again, I want to emphasize, forcing obedience is not faithful obedience. Now, we may know of religions that are national religions, and if you're not a member of that religion, you're not held in high regard. You're somewhat forced to obey. And if you don't, then you're subject to very, very harsh treatment. But what is Jesus looking for? He's looking for people who have true and honest hearts, who understand his teaching. The goodness of him wants to be shown through his followers. Jesus states to Pilate in John 18, verse 36, it says, Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now is my kingdom not from hence," not from this world. Now, if Jesus had not stopped Peter from using the sword to defend him, Pilate might not have given any credence to that statement. My kingdom is not of this world. But what if Peter had cut off more than his ear? Some accounts say that he used his sword and he was going after his head. Malchus was too quick and bent over like that, and the sword cut off just his ear. He was ready to kill on behalf of Jesus. But it didn't happen that way. Jesus healed him. He healed an enemy. Jesus knew who his enemies were, and he did not say that I should not be delivered to the Romans, but to the Jews. He knew who was trying to kill him, and he admitted that in front of Pilate. We'll get back later, but at this point, I felt it was the appropriate time to say that Jesus knew that it was the Jews who were going to essentially kill him, call for his death. In verse 12, it says, the band, the chief captain, and the officers of the Jews seized Jesus, grabbed him, wasn't going to get away. I would think there's probably not much physical struggle by Jesus to get away. But they bound him. Mark 14, verse 50 records that while they were binding Jesus, the disciples, they all forsook him and fled. Now we get into the time of where these men have taken Jesus before Annas. Let's look at John 18 and verse 12. We'll read through verse 27. I know it's a long reading, but there's a lot of information here. Beginning verse 13, and they led him away to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year. Now it was Caiaphas who advised the Jews that it was expedient that one man should die for the people. Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. And we know that disciple is John. We have strong belief that it's John. Now that disciple was known to the high priest and went with Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest. But Peter stood at the door outside. Then the other disciple who was known to the high priest went out and spoke to her who kept the door and brought Peter in. Then the servant girl who kept the door said to Peter, "You are not also one of this man's disciples, are you?" And Peter said, "I am not." And now the servants and officers who had a fire of coals stood there, for it was cold, and they warmed themselves, and Peter stood with them and warmed himself. And the high priest then asked Jesus about his disciples and his doctrine. And Jesus said to him, "I spoke openly to the world. I always taught in synagogues and in the temple where the Jews always meet. And in secret, I have said nothing. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. Indeed, they know what I said. Verse 22, and when he had said these things, one of the officers who stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, do you answer the high priest like that? And Jesus answered him, if I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil, but if well, why do you strike me? Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. And now Simon Peter stood and warmed himself. Therefore, they said to him, you are not also one of his disciples, are you? He denied it and said, I am not. And one of the servants of the high priest, a relative of him whose ear Peter cut off, said, did I not see you in the garden with him? Peter then denied again, and immediately a rooster crowed. Now, back to the beginning of what I just read. Verse 13, Matthew, Mark, and Luke do not record Jesus being brought before Annas. Annas was the former high priest. He was the father-in-law of Caiaphas. And the Jews who had arrested Jesus may have wanted ideas of what to charge Jesus with. What are the charges, and how can we get it before the Romans? Annas may have wielded some influence, may have still been partially ruling, but he's included in this. Verse 14 reads, John 18, verse 14, identifies Caiaphas as the high priest. Remember in John 11, it says Caiaphas had suggested to the Jews the way to deal with Jesus was to kill him. And since the Jews were under Roman rule, the Roman governor had to approve the execution of Jesus, and that man is Pilate. We'll get to him in just a moment. Beginning at verse 15, soon after the capture, Peter and another disciple followed John. Peter and another disciple, who we again believe is John, followed Jesus to where he had been charged. And John was known by the high priest, those in the high priest, and he was allowed to enter into the next room, the closer room, or the courtyard. And it says that Peter stood outside the door, but John spoke with the lady who was somewhat keeping track of who came and who left. Spoke with the lady and brought Peter into the room. And the lady keeping the door asked Peter, are you one of the man's disciples? Peter said, I am not. We emphasized last Sunday morning the fact that Peter was going to deny. Jesus said, Peter, you'll deny me three times. Peter certainly is a human. He's just endured the capture of who he believes is the Savior of the world. And what is happening? Do you think we would have some questions if we were followers of Jesus and we were at this point? We thought you were going to do this, and that now you're captured, those plans will go away. But they didn't have the full picture. So here's Peter, demoralized and disheartened. His master is arrested and now before the court. And Peter was weak, and he failed. He failed to admit, yes, I am a follower of Jesus. Verse 18 tells about Peter standing with the Jewish servants and officers close to a fire. He had moved farther away from Jesus, farther away from his companion, John. Beginning at verse 19, Annas asked Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. That's part of his role. Why are you here? What have you been doing? What's your goals? And it's unusual that a person in the United States would be asked to self-incriminate himself. But that's kind of what the high priest was doing. The high priest asked Jesus to testify about himself and essentially convict himself of any wrong. Verse 20. There was a very good response by Jesus. He says, I have spoken openly to the world in synagogues and in the temple. I spoke nothing in secret. He had made no conspiracies against the Jews or Rome. He states in verse 21, if you're asking me what I've said, don't ask me. Ask those who I spoke it to. Ask those hearers. They will tell you. He said, ask the ones who heard what I have said, as they know my teachings. And Jesus is asking them to call on witnesses on what he had been teaching. He wanted an objective reply to the answer from Annas. Verse 22, the officers and the guards of the temple says that one of them struck Jesus for answering the high priest in this manner. Now again, we're before Annas. Caiaphas is the high priest, but Annas was the former high priest. And he was asking for the truth to be told by others. That's what Jesus wanted. Verse 23, under all this pressure, what a powerful response from Jesus. In verse 23, he says, if I have spoken evil, bring the witnesses to it. But if I have spoken the truth, why do you hit me? I wonder if that guard felt any remorse for hitting him. Probably not. Verse 24, Annas therefore sent him, still bound, to Caiaphas, the high priest. In verse 25, jumping back to Peter, warming himself with the officers of the court and the servants of the high priest, they asked, art thou also one of his disciples? And it wasn't just one person, but several were present. And he denied it. He said, I am not. And one of the Jewish servants who was with Judas in that group of men who captured Jesus was a relative of Malchus and said, Did not I see thee in the garden with him? I've got my own eyewitness that you were there, you were with him. And Peter therefore denied him again, and when he did, the rooster crowed. So he fulfilled exactly what Jesus had said. Peter, even though you say that you will follow me anywhere, that you will even die on my behalf, you're going to deny me three times.
Yeah.
Yes?
Seven 45. Annas, not being a high priest, Annas was his father. And Luke chapter 3, when Luke tells about all the people that during this time that under the high priest of Annas and Caiaphas, he says, in Luke chapter 3, the Holy Spirit comments on himself when he tells us the importance of that in this very chapter. He just went over chapter 18. We have a lot of books written. The Holy Spirit tells us exactly why he mentioned that it was under the high priesthood of Annas and Caiaphas during this period of time.
Okay. Thank you for mentioning that. I read over this several times. Well, is Annas retired? Is he kind of hovering? Is he pulling some of the strings, so to speak, for his son-in-law and telling him how to get things done? But there's that good explanation of the relationship between Annas and Caiaphas. Now, Matthew reports that Peter, as he denied Jesus for the third time, knew what he had done. And here he is, one of the bravest disciples, denying he is associated with Jesus. And he went away crying. I'm going to mention something out of Luke, the 22nd chapter. And John does not record this information, but it has important parts, important information. Luke 22, beginning at verse 63, records Jesus is mocked. And the men that held Jesus mocked him, and they smote him, they struck him. And when they had blindfolded him, they struck him on the face and asked him, saying, "Prophesy. Who is it that struck you?" And many other things blasphemously spake they against him. So they were blaspheming Jesus. And Jesus, even before the council in Luke 22, beginning about verse 66, records, "And as soon as it was day, the elders of the people and of the chief priests and the scribes came together and led him into their council, saying, 'Art thou the Christ? Tell us.' And he said unto them, 'If I tell you, you will not believe. And if I also ask you, you will not answer me, nor let me go. Hereafter shall the Son of Man sit on the right hand of the power of God.' Then said they all of these Jews who were listening to what Jesus said, 'Art thou then the Son of God?' And he said unto them, 'Ye say that I am.'" That's the right answer. Now, a resource I had said, it offered an explanation of this. When Jesus said, "Ye say that I am," he was essentially saying, "You rightly say that I am." Luke records for us, "And they said, 'What need we any further witness? For we ourselves have heard of his own mouth.'" And the Jews now had what they needed from Jesus, that he had blasphemed before God, that he acknowledged that he was the Son of God. And that was punishable by death by their laws. So now, what do they need? They need an executioner. Could the Jews do that?
No.
They could, if they need permission.
Yeah.
At this point.
So who did they take him to?
Romans.
Take him to the representative of Rome, who is Pilate, and goes downhill from there.
The problem with it, whenever Pilate was talking, he said, "This is your law." It had nothing to do with Roman law.
Right.
So they, and his concern was with Roman law. Now, what the Jews were concerned with was a different story. They was just interested in killing and finding a reason for it.
Yeah, but what they needed was an execution. I heard or read that if the Jews did execute somebody, they did it by stoning. But the Romans, how did they do it? Crucifixion. So now the Jews, in verse 28 of John 18, they lead Jesus to the praetorium, and the Jews could try a person, punish the one found guilty any way they wanted to, except the Jews could not put them to death. And that's what caused the Roman governor to get involved. And it was early in the day, and the courts were in session. Apparently they did that to beat the heat later in the day. And the Jews wanted the trial to be done quickly to avoid any problems with the many people, the many Jews that already believed that Jesus was the Christ. So was this done out in the open? No. Very quickly, privately, so that they wouldn't arouse those Jews who already recognized Jesus as the Son of God. If you notice, as you read through here in John 18, the Jews did not want to go into the praetorium where Pilate was. Anybody know why?
Be defiled.
All right. They would defile themselves, and this was the Passover week. Now, we'll capture Jesus. We'll haul him in front of any and everybody that'll listen. But we ourselves, we're not going to go into that praetorium because we wouldn't have time to clean ourselves and partake within the Passover week. A little bit sanctimonious, I believe. They were making false charges. They were blaspheming, alleging Jesus was a threat to Rome. And then they would soon request the release of Barabbas, a thief and a murderer. So here, they're at the edge of the praetorium. It causes Pilate to have to go out to them. And the Jews, well, Pilate asked in verse 29, he asked the Jews, "What accusations do you bring against this man? What are the charges?" And the Jews in verse 30 said, "If he was not an evildoer, we would not have brought him to you." They got a strong case, right? He's an evildoer, and you ought to rely upon what we say, Pilate. Very little consideration.
Yeah.
Yes?
Instead of curiosity, tell you it's real deep, were they just more emboldened when they stoned Stephen? Or how is there a difference between Christ and Stephen versus, you know, we've got to go get committed versus everything that's stoning right now?
I would think there would be more evidence, because that's in Acts. Jesus has arisen. There's been sermons preached. Many, many people had already obeyed. But here they are, stoning Stephen. It may have been that there were harsher people who heard Stephen's words and said, "Well, we can do this in private. We can stone him."
His speech was pretty damning as well, right before they stoned him. You know, it seemed a little more bold and a little more in your face than some of the other.
Yeah.
Christ was like, I can talk about it. Christ was quiet. He was not chastised.
Yeah.
Good question. Because what were they preaching? What were they preaching tonight? They were preaching the man who's you know, on the cross. He's not in that tomb anymore. Why? He's risen.
He is on the right hand side of God.
That is this thing that happened to Christ going to be followed because it's been prophesied so long that God is and it's hard to understand people who spoke to Nobel all this field theory. And then when they stoned Stephen had insulted him with his words. They felt really roused up against him because of what he preached.
And it was certainly somewhat of a line drawn in the sand. A new dispensation began.
Yeah, the Jews were losing.
And they were losing. So they turned the heat up, maybe. Blake, did I see your hand?
And they were scared of the multitude. There was a multitude of people. They were worried we'd rise up and fight. So they went and did it. They tried to do it before the sun came up in the morning, and if he had done it, yes, they also, it was how it all played out, was just how it was prophesied. But they also didn't want to have their hands dirty by being unclean, because they had come into contact with the dead body. They would be unclean and wouldn't be able to observe the Passover as the leaders of the Jewish people.
Yeah. Good point. Now, verse verse 31 of John 18, Pilate states, "You take him, you Jews, you take him, you judge him according to your law." But the Jews told Pilate, "It's not lawful for us to put anyone to death." We can go back to when Caiaphas in chapter 11 said it's expedient that someone should die, that the whole Jewish nation not perish. So they plotted how to kill him from that day. And the Jewish leaders had to find someone else to put Jesus to death. That's the Roman government, Roman Empire. And Jesus had foretold he would die and that he would be crucified. Matthew 20, 17 beginning, "And Jesus, going up to Jerusalem, took the 12 disciples apart in the way, and he said to them, 'Behold, we go up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man shall be betrayed unto the chief priests and unto the scribes, and they shall condemn him to death, and shall deliver him unto the,'" who? "The Gentiles." So what were the Romans? They were Gentiles. So here he's fulfilling what was said in Matthew 20. "They shall deliver him to the Gentiles to mock and to scourge and to crucify him. And the third day he shall rise again." John 12, verse 31, it says, "Now is the judgment of this world. Now shall the prince of this world be cast out. And if I be lifted up," a reference to his crucifixion that Jesus is making, "from the earth, will draw all men unto me." And then he said, signifying what death he should die. John 18, verse 32, the crucifying would be at the hands of the Romans, the Gentiles. John 18, verse 33, Pilate asked Jesus if he is the king of the Jews for the first time. Luke's account gives us a little bit more information. In Luke 23, verse 13, it says, "And the whole multitude of them arose and led him unto Pilate, and they began to accuse him, saying, 'We find this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to give tribute to Caesar, saying that he himself is a king.' And Pilate asked him, saying, 'Art thou the king of the Jews?' And he answered, 'Thou sayest it.'" Very similar to what he said in Luke 22 and verse 70. "You rightly say that I am." I want to read the 34th verse of John 18. Jesus answered him and said, "Are you speaking of yourself about this? Or did others tell you this concerning me?" It's a great place to stop. So we're going to start there. I'm going to continue on with chapter 19. Again, a very important chapter recording the crucifixion of Jesus. So do your reading. Thank you for the comments, the questions, the attention. Hopefully we've scratched at least the surface of John chapter 18. Thank you.